of the End Zone Podcast. Back, more division previews. Trey Watkins with me as always. We are just sitting here having a good time. This feels like there's good energy. Pre-show conversation, there was good energy. I felt like things were going in the right direction. The AFC South, maybe not the juiciest division, but I certainly have things I have to say about it because I am a person who loves the sound of his own voice and to bloviate. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with the AFC South. We're watching the home run derby just in the background. Trey, what is up with you?
I'm doing the same thing. I'm watching the home run derby in the background, but on mute. Because
yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It's an audio medium.
Circumstances, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Shohei Ohtani, my guy tonight. Hopefully he does some things. Hit some bombs, as they say. Juan Soto, I've heard good things about him. Let's see, how many of these eight players can I do? I know who they are. I know Shohei. I know Juan Soto. I know Trevor Story.
You need to know Matt Olson. That's what you need to know.
Don't know him.
He's a real fun guy.
Who's Joey Gallo?
He's a big old fat power hitter for the Rangers. He's not fat in size, but fat in power.
Ah. Not fat in size, but fat in power. Quote, Trey Walker.
He's a freaking tank, bro. He's a tank, man.
Well, good. Okay. I don't know. Everything's going on. It's the off season. I deleted Twitter. Been off that. Been nice. Detoxing before devoting my life to that certain social media app come August. So it's been a good time. I've enjoyed my time off. Was listening to a tennis podcast earlier. Greg Rosenthal's new podcast, Courts of Thunder. Of course, you know I am the number one Greg Rosenthal consumer. Just listen to everything that man does, no matter what. He's just a good dude. We're trying to get him on the podcast here soon. I think he's very busy, though. He launched a tennis podcast, Trey, so I'm trying to get into tennis. So I did watch Wimbledon Sunday. What's his name? Joker. He did his thing. I actually quite liked it, to be completely honest with you.
It's not the same if Federer and Nadal and Djokovic all aren't dominating. So
yeah. Ball does fly further in Colorado. Used to think that was a myth. Actually went to a Rockies game earlier this year. Absolutely not a myth. I think there's just going to be a lot of home runs this year at this home run derby. And he just keeps taking hacks, this Orioles player. God, it must suck to play on the Baltimore Orioles. Anyhow, the AFC South. Let's get into that here, Trey. Okay, AFC South. I need to bring me energy now, Trey. I was laying down before. I've switched up my positioning. I've decided I'm going no camera today in honor of you. We're just going to be an audio meeting back and forth. But here's the deal. Can you hear me okay? Is this mic in a good position? Maybe I'll hold it.
I can hear you.
Oh, that's a good spot right there. Let's talk a little bit. First, AFC South. Got to talk about them. We aren't going to do our whole breakdown that we did with the AFC stuff on the Texans because, frankly, they don't merit it. They are just in shambles right now. Although, here is what I will say, Trey. They will not go winless. It is just so hard to go winless. I don't know where the win is, but I wholeheartedly believe they will win at least one game.
No, they will. I mean, I like you said, it's so hard to go winless. I mean, these still, even though the team might be bad, these are still NFL players. So one, you know, shot the dark, one random old Sunday, the Texans are going to put it all together as a football team and somehow win a football game. Like you said, I don't, like we both said, we don't know where that win's going to come from. It could be at the end of the year. It could be some wacky, weird game at the beginning of the year. Who the hell knows? But it's going to come there somewhere. They're still going to be bad, though. Like, they're still going to be complete crap. So, but good for them once they get this one or two wins, you know, for the season and probably get the double one pick unless some team goes 1-15 now? Is that the most loss you can get?
With 1-16.
Oh, brother.
Okay. Right, because 17 games, right?
No, that would equal 18 games.
1-16?
Yeah, you just said 1-17.
Oh, sorry. I must have misspoke. I meant 1-16. That is that's sort of what I am what I was saying, what they could possibly go. I also wanted to point out, it's not quite like other 1-16 team. Like, you could point, let's look back to the Browns, that Browns 0-16 season a few years back. At that point, they still had interesting pieces on the team. Myles Garrett was playing. There was, you know, right? Myles Garrett was on that team, correct? Because that's the year they got Baker with that pick. And Garrett was there before Baker. So usually these bad teams, they have like one or two bright spots to kind of look at. I mean, I guess Laremy Tunsil, but he's probably going to get moved next year just because of the way his contract is. The Texans truly do have like no players on this roster, but it's going to look like a completely different roster next year too, is the thing I'm saying. Like, which is a little bit rare for an NFL team to know they are going to be really, really bad for two straight. Like, this isn't going to be like the Jets this year where you can kind of improve your roster after a bit. Like, this is going to be, they'll get a few players next year, but it's going to take another bad year after that before they even get to intriguing status. So, yeah, I mean, last year we didn't have a team like this because nobody really tried to tank last year, but I can almost promise you during our division our weekly previews and recaps, unless they are a primetime game, we will never select the Texans
ever.
I'm just going to make that promise to you right now. We will never, and I'll try to do it. I need you to hold me to it, Trey, because you know me. I'll find a way to be like, oh, they're intriguing in week three.
Hell no.
I need you to stop me. We should never talk. Oh, man, that fan just totally. Did you see that?
I did not, actually.
There's,
oh, gee, now I did.
that guy got blown up.
No, Olsen, please. Just hit two, bro.
That was wild. Matt Olsen has caught up here.
How little we care about the Texans. We're literally live discussing the home run derby.
Yeah, I mean, we're flipping back and forth between sports. This is very much an off-season show. Our podcast listeners should know, if we get to the point in the night where Otani's up, we will definitely be stopping conversation on this and fully focusing on that for a little while. So this is you're going to get a little bit of sport crossover. Matt Olson turns out pretty good. Didn't know who he was before this. So good for him. Good that he's good. Okay. Where do you want to start here, Trey, in the AFC South?
Let's start with the Jaguars.
Okay. So I will go first. Best position group.
On the Jaguars.
On the Jaguars. And I'm going to say this one was tough. I was really looking at the Jags closely before we got into this. I think the best position group, though, is wide receiver. I think that's where they have the most proven commodities. You have DJ Chark, who, say what you will about him, but he's always a consistent contributor. Maybe he's not a Pro Bowler every year, but he is a consistent contributor, and he can contribute, you know, to his team and always ends up making a difference. You bring in Marvin Jones Jr., who is always good. LaVisca Chenault was really good for them last year as a rookie, and you'd expect him to make the jump moving forward as one of these young players on their team. And that's just a really solid starting three for Trevor Lawrence to throw to. I do think that their passing attack has some mustard and should be exciting to watch.
On you know, face value, it should. For fantasy purposes, it should be as well. I think this might be the first year I'll maybe intentionally draft the Jaguars pass catcher in what the last couple years. So for the first time in a couple years, so that should be fun to watch.
I've heard the opposite from some people.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people think that they're not a good fantasy spot because you just don't know who's going to be the number one person. Because
well, it's still going to be Chark anyway. So, well, that is that actually, when I think about it, that is
Chenault was kind of the number one guy by the end of the year. And Marvin Jones Jr. is always good. So you don't. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a good fantasy, you know, receiving core.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, not bad. Like, you shouldn't avoid them or anything. But, like, I mean, it seems, like, unwise to hitch your cart to one of those guys within, like, and count on them as starters, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm going with best position group for the Jaguars. I don't know if you saw anything else that really stood out to you.
I guess maybe I was thinking maybe corner group, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
See, I
position group, but as one of the maybe one of the better ones on the team.
Here's what I think, Trey. I think that the whole team is solid. Like, there's no spot that blows you away, but I don't look at any place and be like, oh, yeah, that's going to be a liability every single week.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Which I guess brings a hard question to you, which is, what do you think about the worst position group on this team?
Yeah, while you were giving that whole explanation on the Jags wide receivers, I was trying to think of a position group that might stand out as the worst one. I can't really think of one. I mean, unless you have something. I can't really think. I was thinking maybe they're inside linebackers, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe they're inside linebackers. It just kind of depends on how you feel about. No, I like Joe Schobert. I've always liked Joe Schobert. I mean,
I'm not the big fan of Schobert.
I think that he's a decent guy. It's I guess we can kind of branch this off. The Jaguars, to me, are a really interesting team because I really don't think they're going to be a playoff team.
They're not.
But I really don't think they're going to suck either. Like, I think that we are going to go into December and they will be playing meaningful football games in December. Like, they will be fighting for a playoff spot.
Maybe.
I don't think they'll make it in the end, but I do believe they'll be in that mix.
Because, I mean, if you did here's where I think we can go with worst position groups. If you looked last year and you said, what is your worst position group? You would have 100% last year said, and we did, they're secondary.
Mm-hmm.
The number one thing that just like has me so happy, Trey. Trey Herndon will not be starting a cornerback this year for them. He just won't be. And Trey Herndon is just like one of the worst cornerbacks I've ever watched play. And he's a good replacement level corner, but he is not a starting corner. And where he is right now is a depth guy just to kind of have for a few downs here and there. That's perfect because that's where he thrives. He is not a full-time starter. They pick up Shaq Griffin.
He's decent.
Like I said last season, my opinion hasn't much changed on Griffin. He's aggressively meh, but aggressively meh is better than bad. Mm-hmm. And then you have second-year pro C.J. Henderson, who did not look terrible when he was healthy last year. He looked pretty promising, actually, I thought. So that's where you could maybe say the weakness words, but I view the secondary as average. I mean, nothing more, nothing less. I view the Jaguars as a whole as average, and we'll go to quarterback outlook next. Trey, okay, we did this thing. We went through the draft. We all said Trevor Lawrence, oh yeah, no doubt, number one overall. We said that every single time. Every single guest we had on said that. Blah, 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 blah. Trevor Lawrence this, Trevor Lawrence that. We've been hearing this for almost the past 2 years now. Yep. Okay, here it is. What do you expect from Trevor Lawrence in year one?
A lot of people have said that Trevor Lawrence is best prospect, best quarterback prospect in years, best quarterback. Some have said best quarterback prospect since Luck. I mean, I'm not the biggest, I guess you could say investor into, investing my time into studying different sorts of college offenses and all that stuff. Because I'm not sure what the main concepts and stuff of Urban Meyer's offense, not really familiar with that. I mean, if we're going off, what he did at Clemson, he looked poised, looked competent, threw the ball well, was accurate, and shut off the athleticism real strong in the pocket. Those are good traits that can translate over to the NFL. But as we know, the NFL is an entirely different monster. Everybody's faster, stronger, smarter. Defensive coordinators zero in even on the weaknesses you didn't even know you had. So I don't think he'll be horrible. I don't think he'll be horrible. I don't think he'll be exceptionally crazy good either. I think he'll be somewhere around that average to above average range, maybe that just above average range, because it's just hard to stock or, get a feel for the stock of a rookie quarterback, especially one that goes number one overall. It doesn't matter how good they were in college, Just like I said earlier, the NFL's a different animal. So, I don't know. I think he'll be in that good to that slightly above average sort of range of quarterbacks, across the league. And I think that's probably the best you can probably expect from Lawrence to start out, because unless you're Patrick Mahomes, we don't see a lot of Patrick Mahomes, a lot of those type of players, throughout history, they rarely come around. So
yeah.
I think it's best to, not expect anything crazy, good for Trevor Lawrence, and not expect anything, crazy bad either. So, I am excited to watch him though, nonetheless though. So I'm really excited to see how he does up there in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer, because Urban Meyer's always had some weird things in his offense that's always left me, scratching my head saying, what the heck is he doing? But in hindsight, it's good. So if that means anything, I'm excited to watch him play.
Yeah, comparing Lawrence on the curve of Mahomes and Luck is unfair, but one guy I think I will compare him to is Justin Herbert. I mean, Herbert last year, if you quietly put up some of the best quarterback stats as a rookie since Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
And was very good, kept the Chargers competitive in every game they played, and you could see it. You could see, okay, this guy's going to be a good quarterback. I would argue that there were points last year, most of the year, he was a top five quarterback, Justin Herbert.
Yeah, points last year, yeah.
Yeah, I think if Trevor Lawrence can kind of replicate that, then that's a successful season for Trevor Lawrence. I expect him to be what Justin Herbert was last year, which is someone who's probably not going to get a ton of national media attention, but who is still going to be considered very, very good and who can make his team fun and watchable every week. I will certainly be watching the Jaguars a lot this year, I think. We're going to try a new format on this podcast where we only cover certain games. I definitely think one of my games I pick is going to be, you know, week one Trevor Lawrence against the Texans. That'll be a really good barometer to see where he is, because, you know, the Texans are terrible, as we talked about, and it's a good place for Trevor Lawrence to learn a little bit. And he can really, I think, show off during that opener. All right. Here goes my turn, I believe, with a little dealer's choice on the Jaguars. Back to something that you touched on. What does Urban Meyer look like in the NFL? I too don't really study college offenses. As I do a preliminary Google search on what is Urban Meyer's offense, I think we're going to see he's kind of got this. Here's the Jaguars website has to say. He's an offensive innovator and willing to adjust. Myers has called the offense a combination of a one-back offense and a shotgun-to-run spread, which Myers once called power football with a spread set. Quarterback play, particularly decision-making, is key. So it sounds like it's going to be run out of spread and then spread kind of concepts. So I picture something like that being like a Shanahan offense almost. Well, actually, not at all. Those are completely different offenses, which I just think it's going to be interesting for what, because I, like I said, I just, you know, I read it off the internet to you guys just barely. I have no idea what Urban Meyer's offense is going to look like, and I'm really excited to see what it ends up looking like.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. No, it's fine to be reasonably excited for his offense, you know. I mean, you know, despite all the craziness that sometimes associates itself with Urban Meyer, he still managed to put out a pretty decent amount of college offenses, you know, during his college career coaching. So that'll be one thing, you know, to be excited about and monitor over the year for sure. Yeah. Mr. Eric.
Yes, indeed. I do wonder. I do wonder what that'll end up looking like. Sorry, I got distracted by an email that came across my desk that was Yahoo trying to sell me Yahoo Fantasy Plus, and for a second I thought they were trying to charge me to play fantasy football this year, and I was very confused. But I got that figured out. Wins, ceiling, floor. I think the floor is like 6 wins. I really do think that they're a talented enough roster to get that at least. And I do think the ceiling is something like 10, 11 wins. I would not be shocked if the Jaguars were a playoff team. Would not be shocked.
Okay, that's a little bit ambitious of you. I think we have to
Ceiling. I don't think they'll be a playoff team, but
no.
Okay, I just want to ask you, because you seem a little bit lower. So you would be surprised if they made the playoffs.
I would be, yes.
Okay. Why is that, I guess? I guess my reasoning for why, you know, I wouldn't be surprised is Trevor Lawrence has all this hype. Trevor Lawrence has some good offense around him. I mean, we didn't even talk about the running backs. James Robinson was awesome last year. As a power runner, and you can have Travis Etienne as a pass catching back. You throw in some good weapons around him in average defense. Let's face it, the AFC South isn't the strongest of divisions. I don't see why they can't make the playoffs. I guess I just want to know why you're a little bit lower on them than I am.
I mean, really, it all boils down to this for me. One being, it's a really, really, really young roster. Like, I know there's some veterans sprinkled in there, but overall, this is still a relatively young roster. So, you know, the ins and outs of being a consistent football team, attention to detail, execution, all those little details that some people might not, you know, value as much at face value, they matter a great deal. And it's hard to, you know, fully get behind a young football team like Jacksonville having all those things down so they can, you know, reach the ceiling that you just explained, which was 10-11 wins. So I'm just not a big believer in that. Two being, in part, you know, the Jaguars having a relatively young roster. It's such a brand new, you know, sort of vibe around the team. There's a new quarterback, rookie quarterback, new players everywhere on both sides of the ball. You have a brand new coaching staff, including a head coach who's making the jump from college to the NFL. When he's coached basically, you know, college football his entire coaching career, and unless I missed him being an assistant somewhere in the NFL. So that's always another thing to consider, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to judge this team's ceiling when it comes to reckoning. And I think another thing is that for them to fight for a playoff spot, I don't think it matters really. Well, of course it matters how good the AFC South is, but even if the AFC South, you know, if the division winner in the AFC South doesn't hit maybe 11, 12, maybe 13 wins, that's ambitious for both the Colts and the Titans, who are the presumed favorites. You still have to worry about the entirety of the AFC. I mean, if we're going strictly basically off predictions, you know, well, not predictions, but just going through the depth of the AFC, you still have Miami, you still have New England still there, you know, and they're going to be coming back stronger after all the offseason additions they made. You still have Buffalo. That's just AFC East. You know, AFC North, you have Pittsburgh, you have Baltimore, you have Cleveland. AFC South, you know, Tennessee, Indy. AFC West, you have Kansas City. You have the Chargers, who I think are going to be really good. And then maybe the Denver Broncos, if, you know, the quarterback situation isn't as bad as expected. So that's I'm just not, you know, sold on, you know, that them even, or that number 10 or 11 being their ceiling. I think their ceiling for me is probably 8-9 wins, honestly. And I think their floor is probably closer to like 4 or 5. Well, not 4. I'll say their floor is around 5 wins. Because okay. I think they're talented enough to stay above that four win threshold. So it's just too much uncertainty with this team for me to, you know, confidently say, hey, this team's ceiling could honestly be 10-11 wins. But looking over their roster, you know, looking over the potential, you know, that the whole team has, including the coaching staff, then I can understand why you put your ceiling at 10-11 wins. They're going to be an exciting football team to watch week in and week out, you know, just because of the players that they have, you know, and the potential craziness that can go on with them each and every week. So I can understand being, you know, your ceiling for them being at 10-11 wins, but I'm just not confident in that right now.
All right. Let's move to let's move to the Indianapolis Colts. And we'll switch up here. So you tell me what the best position is on this team.
Best position group on the Colts. I'm trying not to overthink this here, but I think I'll just roll with defensive line, honestly.
Okay.
I think that defensive line is honestly stacked, unless I'm mistaken. I mean, you have guys, I'm gonna be so ashamed because I forgot his name. DeForest Buckner. DeForest Buckner is one of the best interior defensive linemen in all of football, if not one of the best defensive linemen in all of football. Because he's so good in the run game, so powerful, just wrecking opposing teams' run games each and every week. I'm real confident in DeForest Buckner's game. And even on the edge, I'm sorry. I'm trying to look through the roster. I mean, it looks like on here they added Antoine Woods. He's a nice depth piece on the defensive line, played real well in Dallas. I like Quiddy Pay. I like that they added him, a rookie out of Michigan. Dayo Odeyingbo. It's going to be a challenge pronouncing this name. Odeyingbo. I watched him a little bit at Vanderbilt. I love what he brings to the table. If he can, you know, get back to his form, because he ruptured his Achilles back then. So I like what they have on the defensive line. I mean, you could go offensive line if you want. They have a lot of talent there, offensive line. But the glaring, you know, issue at left tackle, you know, that's the thing that probably puts a lot of pause and hesitancy in me. So,
And I was listening to some podcasts this offseason that say, you know, lots of announcers like to say, oh, yeah, best offensive line in football.
Yeah, that's
– but it turns out I do like to say that. But it turns out, like, it's pretty average. Like, mm-hmm. Quentin Nelson's really good, but, like, really the rest of the line is, you know, an hour, you know. It's not a liability, but it's nothing to be like, oh, yeah, that's, like, it's total difference maker. So, yeah, that's definitely a good point. I'm a little bit worried about the defensive line, to be honest with you, Trey. Justin Houston was a huge part of his defense last year. And he walked away, and you're just counting a lot on Quiddy Pay to be your edge guy, basically. And edge rusher in general for this team, I just seems really thin to me.
I mean, and I say, you know, and it, that's fair concern that you bring up, you know, long out, you know, with Quiddy Pay being as your sole edge guy. You're right. You're totally correct. But, you know, just looking through, you know, this roster, I mean, this roster isn't, I guess you could say, particularly deep in terms of exceptional talent anywhere. And excuse me if I'm wrong. I mean, quarterback, you know, Carson Wentz, that's your bona fide starter. I mean, running back, I could see it maybe. Jonathan Taylor, Jordan Wilkins. Naeem Hines, that's a nice monster. That's a nice three-head monster. Actually, I should have picked running back there.
Marlon Mack, too.
Marlon Mack. I'm not all that high on Marlon Mack anymore, but he can still bring some.
Well, it just depends on how he looks after the Achilles. People forget, before the Achilles, he was awesome last year.
Yeah, but it's an Achilles.
It doesn't matter
which sport. Achilles, like,
it's a big one.
Severe Achilles, a different breed of injury, man.
Big one.
They will stop your athleticism with the snap of a finger. So I'm real concerned about that. Looking through running back, I should have picked running back. I was trying to pick up the Colts roster off the top of my head, and I couldn't really get to running back. So I just thought to defensive line. So
no, it's okay.
Yeah. Defensive line, running back, both good. Both good position groups for the Colts. Okay.
Worst position group. I'm going to go I'm going to go Well, I'm just going to combine. I'm going to kind of take over the Colts because I just was thinking about this earlier today, Trey, and I just have a lot of thoughts. So can I just word bomb it on you really quick? I'm going to give you the worst position group, the quarterback outlook, and my dealer's choice all at the same time. And you can start looking through the schedule and I'll let you do floor ceiling stuff. I think the passing game as a whole is in trouble. I talked about this briefly on our win totals episode, which came out today, but you will be hearing this next week. So last week, go check that out. But I think people who believe that Carson Wentz is going to be the solution in Indianapolis have simply not watched Carson Wentz for the majority of 3 years. To think he's an upgrade on what Phillip Rivers was last year is that's absolutely the most foolish thing I've ever heard. To be honest with you, in like my entire life, he is not that good, dude. He's just not. And who he's throwing to also concerns me. T.Y. Hilton's a big name, but T.Y. Hilton for most of last year did not match T.Y. He was not T.Y. Hilton. I know you watch a lot of the division. You'd agree with that, right? Like, until the last four or five games of the season, he was basically non-existent for them. He had a really down year last year, T.Y. Hilton, to be completely honest with you. I mean, he only had 762 yards as a whole. For T.Y. Hilton, for a number one wide receiver with Phillip Rivers as your quarterback, that's low. That's a low number. Michael Pittman Jr. showed, I guess, a little something, but I never really saw it from him. And you're really counting on Paris Campbell and, you know, Zach Pascal to be major guys, and they've both kind of struggled with injuries. Jack Doyle's a good tight end. Mo Ali Cox kind of disappeared late in the year. I don't know. I am not at all confident in this passing game, Trey. And that kind of leads me to my question here for dealer's choice. And I think I basically covered my outlook on Carson Wentz. I don't really think he's the guy. But like, I do think it's time to basically say, I know that he's had a tough situation with Andrew Luck suddenly retiring. I get that. But like, at some point, you have to put Frank Reich and Chris Ballard on the hot seat. And Chris Ballard's not there yet because GMs get longer leashes and he's built a decent team, a really good team for a little while, but now it's kind of starting to decline a little bit. I would say this was the first draft of his tenure where he didn't really knock it out of the park. I just feel like if things go sideways for the Colts, I don't think Frank Reich survives this year. And that's my word vomit on the Colts.
That's okay. That might be a little too hot on the hot take view. I think the Colts are going to give Frank Reich every ounce of opportunity to find the right quarterback to lead this football team soon, because if they find the right quarterback, then they're simply one of the best teams.
But here's the thing, Trey.
Okay.
They could have gone other places than Carson Wentz.
They could have, true.
They didn't have to give up what they gave up for Carson. They could have gotten Ryan Fitzpatrick. They could have drafted someone. Like, I believe Frank Reich went to bat And I believe Frank Reich, the reason I believe it's so tied at the hip is because Frank Reich and Carson Wentz are tied at the hip. If Carson Wentz can't reinvigorate his career under Frank Reich, his career is done.
True.
And true. I think kind of vice versa. If Carson Wentz doesn't pull through over Frank Reich will not be a head coach. And maybe you're right. Maybe it takes more than 1 year. But I do think that by the end of the year, people are going to start talking about him as a guy to keep your eye on, you know, as someone that can, you know, could lose their job potentially.
I don't know. I mean, I think everybody has to take in consideration, you know, what Frank Reich did with Andrew Luck. Because what Frank Reich did with Andrew Luck, he kept Andrew Luck protected. Andrew Luck had one of the best years of his career. He was so really, really efficient. I mean, not that he wasn't efficient before, but he was efficient in a safe way. The running game was really good, and that helped him with play action, all the jazz that comes in Frank Reich's offense. You can't really just can Frank Reich, you know, just dismiss the year he had with Andrew Luck. You know, I think if you give him a chance to, okay, maybe let's say Carson Wentz does indeed suck for the Colts, like many of us are expecting him to. Okay, you can maybe can Carson Wentz from the starting job and give Frank Reich every opportunity to find the next guy, because he's been proven to, you know, when he has a good quarterback at the helm, his offense works and it produces a lot of really, really good results. So I think Jim Irsay and even Chris Ballard will probably look at that season that he had with Andrew Luck, and then he'll look back and say, hey, all right, Carson Wentz experiment, bad, horrible, never should have done it. Maybe Frank Reich was mistaken. Okay, cool. Let's find another quarterback that we think can take this team over the top, you know, with the defense that we have and the coaching staff that we have in place, and we'll run it back again. If that doesn't work, then we'll just can, you know, Frank Reich. I think that's the threshold that it's going to take to can, you know, Frank Reich, if he can find another quarterback, a decent quarterback, and it just doesn't work out again. So I'd wait until then to even start thinking about some sort of canning for Frank Reich. Now, for Chris Ballard, I mean that's really sort of a different story, honestly, and a story that we just don't have enough time to get into tonight. Gotcha. So,
yeah.
But it's more of the same with Chris Ballard, you know, dismissing the whole quarterback talk aside, you know, just looking at his roster stuff over the years, his lack of the agency spending. You know, that's like I said, it's a story we'll have to get into another day. So I think we'll just have to wait, you know, and see, and, you know, see if first and see if Carson Wentz is the guy, because there's still a chance that Carson Wentz could revitalize his career on the right. But if it doesn't, then I don't think we should be so quick to, you know, put Frank Reich and Ballard on a hot seat.
All right, Trey. So let's very quickly, what do you think the floor and ceiling are for the Colts?
Floor and ceiling, I think their ceiling is around 10-11 wins, and that's if, you know, Carson Wentz turns into the MVP Carson Wentz that we saw previously. But I don't think that's going to happen, which leads me into the ceiling. It leads me into the floor. I think their floor is probably around 7-8 wins, you know, just because Carson Wentz is that bad, and if he plays bad, they don't have, you know, any decent options behind him. So
all right. Okay. I word vomited for a while about the Colts, but now it is Eric Jensen's time to sit back and learn a little bit from the man who covers the Titans so well, does a great job with Broadway Sports and Black Sports Online and Twitter and all over the place. It is the best Titans blogger in my book and number one Titans blogger in my heart, Trey Watkins. It is your time to shine, buddy. You are going to walk me through best, worst, dealer's choice, this, that, and the other. And at the end, I'll just chime in. I might have a question or two. And
that will be it for our AFC South podcast here. On this one, look for our NFC South podcast coming next after this. Very excited about that one. We're going to have a good friend of mine, Sammy Moore, on. And then we are going to, of course, have our great friend, Deboy Wolf, Ryan, on to chat about the NFC South. Okay, Trey, buddy, why don't you tell me about the Titans?
Thank you for giving me the floor. And as previously, when we've previewed each and every team, you know, during the division preview that we did previously and so far that we've done tonight, we're going to start out with best and worst position groups. I think looking back or looking through this Titans roster, I think it's obvious. I don't think it's obvious. Let me take that back. But I think putting this position group down as the best one, I don't think anybody would blame you. And I think the best position group right now is probably the offensive line. All across the board from left to right, I think the offensive line is set to have another real big year. They were really good last year. They were even better, you know, after their franchise left tackle Taylor DeJuan went down with a torn ACL. Now he's back sliding on that left side and creating another unit that should be really impressive for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, left to right, you have Luan. You know, of course, everybody knows how good he is. You have Roger Saffold, who was really, really underrated last year. He really came in clutch for the Titans last year at left guard when Taylor Lewan went down, and even when his injury replacement went down with an injury later on in the year. So Roger Saffold, if you're ever trying to keep up with offensive line names throughout the year, keep that name in mind. He's a really, really good football player. And you could say the same for Ben Jones. He was really, really underrated last year as well. Real good leader, kept the unit together. With all the injuries and all the ins and outs that happened with the offensive line last year. So that's another real good football player to keep in mind. And, you know, going over to right guard, I think, you know, Nate Davis, he's probably one of the more talented and proven young offensive linemen in football. I mean, the jump he made from a rookie just in 2019 to 2020, you know, was his second year in the league. He was really, really good for the Titans. He even got an all-pro vote. He's a really, really good football player. Right tackle is a bit of a mystery. Last year's starter, Dennis Kelly, is no longer with the team, so that leaves the spot up for open competition, which will probably consist of maybe David Questenberry, who started at left tackle last year after Ted Lewan's injury replacement went down with an injury. You have Kendall Lamb, who was a reserve offensive lineman for the Cleveland Browns just last year. He comes over, you know, as I think the Titans want him as a swing tackle, but he probably has a chance to compete for the starting right tackle role. And then you have Tyson Brelo, who was Taylor Lewan's initial injury replacement on the left side. He's one of the other veterans that can compete for that right tackle spot. And I think the dark horse here for right tackle is probably rookie Dylan Radins. He's a offensive tackle out of North Dakota State, played on the left side. But the Titans will probably envision him as a right tackle. He can make the switch over to right tackle. He's real good with his feet, real quick, real good athlete for the position, real good athlete for his size, period. So that's a dark horse starter to keep in mind at left tackle. So just going back over that offensive line, real good unit, and I expect really big things out of that unit again this year, blocking for Derrick Henry and, you know, holding up in pass protection for Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, with that in mind, I'll go over to the worst position group. And it's kind of hard to, I guess you could say, pin down a bad position group on this football team. I mean, it's easy to look over to the defense because of how bad they played last year. But I think with the improvements that they made on the defensive side of the ball in the secondary and an edge rusher specifically, I don't think the worst position group is standing on the defensive side of the ball. Instead, I think it probably slides over at tight end. The Titans lost Johnny Smith to the Patriots. He signed a really big deal up there in New England. They didn't, you know, go out and trade or sign for a big name to replacement. Instead, they're going to rely on Anthony Firkser, who, if you didn't know, he's been one of the Titans' reserve tight ends for the past couple years, been mainly a pass catcher. He isn't the best blocker, so He's been mainly a third down guy, you know, getting those targets on third down, maybe on second down in those extra pass catcher sets, maybe with 3-4 wide receivers on the field. So I think that's where he shined his best. He'll probably be the primary tight end probably this year. I think it all depends on what happens with Todd Downing and what he wants to do with his personnel, whether he wants to add a wide receiver and take a tight end off the field or stay with much of the same like Arthur Smith did last year with multiple tight end sets. So it'll be interesting to see how the Titans deploy him at tight end this year. I mean, behind Anthony First, you have Jeff Swain, mainly a blocking tight end. And then you have a bunch of, you know, unproven guys. You know, you still have Jared Pinkey, who was another one, an intriguing guy that was real athletic at Vanderbilt. So it's not a bad position group, you know, in terms of, I guess you could say, skill, because all those guys in that tight end group have something to bring to the table. But it just doesn't have the amount of talent as, you know, any of the other guys at position groups on the roster on paper. So I think I'll roll with tight end as the worst position group probably on the team. And moving on the quarterback outlook, I think it's going to be expecting more of the same with Ryan Tannehill this year. It's real good. Once again, really efficient, really, really accurate. Didn't make a lot of mistakes. He just did his job, which was to limit the turnovers and, you know, deliver some really big balls, some really good throws down the field. That's not necessarily to say he's a game manager. I think he's far from a game manager. It's just that the Titans don't really, you know, ask, you know, a lot out of him because they had Derrick Henry back there who can run for at least 1,500 yards in this season because that's just how good he is. They have behemoths at wide receiver now with A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Josh Reynolds, a newcomer from Los Angeles who has some size and speed as well. So I think, you know, trying to get an outlook on Ryan Tannehill, it's going to be more of the same, probably what the Titans are asking out of him, you know, in terms of production, in terms of responsibility. So maybe with Arthur Smith and Jonnu Smith both gone, maybe he'll have some more added responsibility in the passing game, simply because, you know, those two guys were big integral parts of the offense, you know, previous years. But I don't think the responsibility and, you know, the amount of responsibility they're asking from will change, you know, this year, because he just has so much more talent, so much talent around him still, even after all those departures. So the outlook still looks good for Ryan Tannehill at quarterback for the Titans. My dealer's choice here for the Titans will probably be what happens, you know, with the defense. I mean, that's probably the big question. The defense is really, really bad last year, gave up tons of yardage in the run game and the passing game. They were really, really, really bad on third down. And they were struck by the injury bug last year as well. So they added some pieces. Bud Dupree at edge rusher. They brought back Jayon Brown to be one of the inside linebackers. They shipped out a bunch of their secondary, brought in Caleb Farley, real good rookie from Virginia Tech. Janoris Jenkins, real good productive veteran out of New Orleans. I mean, There's some additions there that could maybe flip the script for, you know, flip the reputation of this offense or, excuse me, of this defense. So it'll be interesting, really interesting to see how this defense responds after the really bad year that they had in 2020. And finally, with my floor and ceiling for this team, I think the ceiling for this team is just really high. I really think it is because the additions that they made on defense, they can really prove, you know, costly in a good way, simply because the additions that they made are real good in terms of athleticism and production and potential, you know. So you can combine that.
So can I interject my one question here?
Okay, go ahead.
What makes you so high on the defense?
Well, I mean, I'm not really high on the defense. I guess I'm just high on maybe the potential that they have because of the additions that they made. So I'm not really all that high on the defense. I mean, who would, you know, after the bad year that they had last year? But the potential that that unit has, I mean, it's fair to be, I mean, a little bit optimistic about the improvement of defense, because you can't get much worse than they were last year, because they were a really, really, really bad unit last year. So I'm not, you know, crazy down on the defense. I'm not exceptionally high on it. It's just the potential that they have, you know, in terms of, you know, falling back to ways of the mean statistically, and, you know, the additions that they made can really upgrade this defense. So that's probably my stance on the defense, honestly. But, you know, with that in mind, I want to move back over to my ceiling for this football team. I think the ceiling for this football team as a whole is high because, you know, of the factors that I just explained previously. Excuse me. I think the ceiling probably for this team in terms of wins is 10, 11 wins, maybe an extra win if everything goes well. They have really, really good players, I guess. I know that's basic reasoning, but probably at every position on both sides of the ball, they have some sort of player that's a threat. So, if, you know, the potential can get racked up on that, then I think, you know, combined with the offense still being good, which I think it will be, even after the departure of Arthur Smith, Jonnu Smith, and Corey Davis, then I think the ceiling for this team is probably 10, 11 wins, maybe an extra win, like I said earlier. I think the floor for this team is probably 8-9 wins, you know, and that's if the offense takes a little bit of a step back and the defense doesn't, you know, get at least a smidgen better, which I think it will, because it's hard to stay bad, you know, after the year that they had and after the additions that they made in the offseason. So I think the floor is probably 8-9 wins, but I think they'll probably stay above that threshold, in all honesty. So, Mr. Eric?
Yeah, I worry the defense is going to be terrible again. And I guess my one question for you is, like, I'm going to go hot seat again.
Okay.
If Mike Vrabel say they go to the division round again this year.
Okay.
And they lose. Do you begin to have a conversation? And let's say specifically the defense still struggles.
Okay.
And the defense is clearly the reason they lose. Do you finally kind of just say, hey, like, we hired Mike Vrabel as this great defensive coach, but, like, he has never really put it together. I can't think of a single time I've watched the Titans over his regime outside of maybe one or two stretches and thought, man, that's a difference-making defense.
No, and that's a fair question to ask. I think, you know, after the bad years that the defense had, I think at this point you're going to have to, you know, not expect much out of Vrabel when it comes to manning over the defense.
Well, then what can you expect out of Vrabel?
You can expect Vrabel to be a really, really good teacher, a real good manager of the football team, and a real good leader of men. It's what the team has been looking for and what a lot of teams are looking for. From their head coaches. Mike Vrabel was real, you know, important for this team's development when it comes to the young players and even the development of some of the veterans on this team. A lot of, you know, the young players and the players that Mike Vrabel has taught have shown, you know, a good bit of improvement, you know, in their arsenal and their in the technical aspect of their game. So I think that, you know, him being a real good teacher and a real good leader of men and a real good manager of this football team, it's something that holds a lot of stock, you know, when you're considering, you know, the coaching aspect aside from, you know, the side of the ball that they're probably more comfortable coordinating or teaching or whatever term you want to use. So I think that's something that's probably that has to be considered and taken into account as well.
Yeah. I just want to see the defense be better. And I think it is fair. I'll play devil's advocate. What does the offense look like under a new guy? I mean, they stay in-house, but who knows? And obviously such talent with Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, their names didn't even come up once during this, and neither did Derrick Henry's. It's an extremely, you know, it can be a top five offense. It can be.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
I just and I think they're going to be good, Trey. I have serious questions about every year you tell me, oh yeah, the defense, I don't feel too bad about it. And then we're sitting here in December and we're giving up like 30 points to the Texans.
No, see, I'm not here saying that I don't feel too bad about the defense, because all things considered, what I said saying this defense can't be that bad, that's probably like, that's like.
But they always are that bad. No, that's the thing.
No, I'm not saying that. Here's what I'm saying. I think this defense, until they show me otherwise, I still think this defense is bad. That's what I think. I think this defense is still bad until they show me otherwise. So I'm just saying that with how bad they were last year, I don't think there's really any way that's like, you know, saying they can be worse than they were, because they were really bad. I'm not saying, you know, me saying they can't be worse, you know, means that they're going to be exceptionally good, top half of the league in every major defensive statistic known to man. No, I'm not saying that. I mean, they just can't be. It's hard to be worse than they were last year. You know, that's a team full of professional football players and full of professional football players that have been proven, you know, in previous years. You know, even the rookies that are coming in have shown some promise, you know, back in college, and have some intriguing skill sets that can prove worthy, you know, that could have some worth to this defense. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying they're going to be crazy good, you know, in terms of rebounding after the bad year that they have. I'm just saying it's hard to be worse than what they were, because they were really, really bad in 2020. Like, really bad.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about how we see the division playing out. I'll go first here to close out. Titans, first place. Jaguars, second place. Colts, third. Texans, fourth. And I believe the only playoff team out of the division is the Titans.
Okay. I'll have Titans first. I'll have Colts second. Probably, you know, Carson Wentz, you know, I'm still not all that high on him. We're both not that high on him. But it's just hard to envision the Colts, you know, with the roster that they still have, not at least pushing.
I'll give my record for them. I think it's their 4-6-11.
Okay. I think it's probably closer to 8-9, or maybe 9-8. I think that's probably the record for the Colts, honestly. To me, that is. Third, I have the Jags. And then fourth, of course, I have the Houston Texans.
Ready, Trey. Well, that was fun, my man. We're going to get back to watching this home run derby here.
Yep.
In extra time with Ohtani almost up to bat to see if he can take down Juan Soto. Until next time, we will see you around. And next time, you'll be listening to this on Monday. So next time will be Wednesday. Check it out then. Peace out, guys.